So,
what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
This is how my morning went. It started early on with me saying, "The Pope said what?" Yes, the Pope said that, and we're going to get to it in just a little bit. If you have questions, I understand. If you have more questions even after today's show, feel free to send them my way. You can join the conversation by heading over to my Instagram. You can find me at Timory, or give us a call at 1-888-914-9149. Later on during the show, I'll be talking about the Catholic perspective, what the Church has to say about when it is and is not okay to delay having children. That's right, the Pope, Pope Francis, in a new documentary that's been released in Rome this week, also to come to northern part of America in the next few days, has made comments again about same-sex marriage and so on, this time specifically addressing civil unions, giving his support for civil unions. Where does that leave us as Catholics? I understand if you're a little confused. The Church has taught one thing, and is it suddenly teaching something else? No, it's not. Because here's the reality. Pope Francis has not changed the Catholic Church's teaching. He can't. Church teaching remains the same, even if personal comments made by our very own Pope confuse us or contradict things that the Pope himself has said or that the Church teaches. We're going to unpack what the Church teaches about same-sex unions, even diving into some of the Church's documents itself to help provide some clarification why this is actually a really big deal. Because you might be one of those people who looks at me and says, "Timory, we're not talking about marriage, we're talking about civil unions. Why can't we just grant civil union status to people who are in same-sex relationships?" And let me say this. I am someone who has multiple family members with same-sex attraction and partners. Some of those partners who have been in my life my entire life. One of whom recently died in the last few months. These are people that I, too, know and love and have tremendous compassion for. And we could easily say, why can't we just give them the status of civil union? Okay, it's not just my family. And I want to make it clear because someone might say, well, Timory just really hates gay people. And that's just not true. I need you to understand where I'm coming from as a Catholic doesn't mean that I'm not part of the culture. I grew up in the dancing world, in the performing world, surrounded with friends and loved ones who have experienced same-sex attraction. Not only that, in my own neighborhood, some of the nicest people on my block include people living in these same exact type of relationships. So when I point to this issue and what the Church continues to teach, I am not picking on anyone, nor are you, if you have a loved one who experiences same-sex attraction. We're telling the truth by still loving those people. And hey, you may not even ever in your lifetime actually have a conversation about it with people in your own life. And that's the truth of the matter. So has the Church's teaching changed? Can it? Will it? With regard to same-sex marriage or civil unions? No. Let's look at this big picture with regard to theology. God is always faithful to us. There's no duplicity in God. There's no inconsistency. God can't contradict himself. God can't and won't lie. God's perfect. You and me, on the other hand, well, we're working toward that perfection by the grace of Christ. Now, that purification for you and I takes time. We take a painful road of purging to get there, and if we die without mortal sin, we'll even have to go to purgatory in order to be able to even fathom the perfection of God, the honesty, and the unity within him. So sometimes we can't understand God's Church because we can't even understand God because we contradict ourselves. Have you ever said one thing and done another? Have you ever meant to do something but then didn't do it? You see, there's contradiction written all over our lives as humans. Now, it's fascinating to me when I'll speak at a conference and a question will come up while I'm on a panel speaking at a Catholic conference, and the question will sound something like this. Well, what do you think about same-sex marriage? And I'll say, thank you for the question, but it's not a matter of what I think about same-sex marriage. Or at a Catholic conference, it's a matter of what does the Catholic Church teach about same-sex marriage? That's the important question here. And that's something we have to get over. Just because I have a friend down the street or a family member who might experience same-sex attraction doesn't mean what the church teaches should change. And so this is going to help guide us in understanding what's happening and not be confused by what media narratives have to say about the Pope's latest remarks in favor of civil unions. We can't be confused by comments people make or the fact that the media loves this as a means to confuse people and really to endorse a way of living that the mainstream culture loves. The devil also loves this, and I want you to lean in and listen up here. The devil loves what's happening right now because he recognizes that it's creating confusion, distaste, and anger within Catholics, or even joy because we can adopt a topic in their eyes that goes against the culture that you're maybe a little hung up on with regard to your faith, but that's not the case. Do not be deceived. Stand unwaveringly with Christ's church that is the bearer of truth in all times, and it has to remain faithful to it. I think of the words of our first pope, Pope Saint Peter. In 1 Peter, he actually talks about how we have to stay sober and alert because our opponent, the devil, is prowling about the world seeking someone to devour. Our first pope, St. Peter, knew something about that. He denied Christ 3 times during his passion and didn't even show up at the crucifixion. And so if our first pope could struggle a little bit with being honest about knowing God and defending God's truth, is it any surprise that perhaps a pope in 2020 might also struggle at times as well? Pope is the vicar of Christ, but we have to remember that doesn't mean that that person might not struggle with what the church teaches. It is actually quite incredible because inspiration from the Holy Spirit really, truly focuses on key statements that popes rarely make in the history of the church. And so an off-the-hand comment in an interview or a documentary doesn't just transform what the church has always taught. Just because Peter denied Christ, does that mean that Christ didn't exist? Does that mean that Peter didn't know Christ? That he was an apostle to him? You're listening to Trending with Timmery. As I said, my morning started off like this. The Pope said, what? And maybe you too are feeling a little overwhelmed and confused. Well, I'd like to walk with you through one of the documents from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith that, in fact, continues to emphasize the truth of what the church has always taught with regard to same-sex attraction. In fact, the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith has continuously reaffirmed that marriage is between one man and one woman, that a child has a right to a mother and a father, and that the promotion of same-sex civil unions would undermine the well-being of those in relationship and also any children brought into that relationship. These are key things written that we'll walk through in the considerations regarding proposals to give legal recognition to union between homosexual persons, as the document states. So we're going to break down a few things here that are very important. First of all, every major culture in the world has emphasized some form of marriage as a relationship between one man and one woman. no new type of ideology, as the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith points out, can all of a sudden make marriage exist in a different way than between a man and a woman. In fact, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith points to three fundamental elements of God's plan for marriage as was laid out in the book of Genesis, in those first couple of chapters. Now, this is important because if we're looking to answers about our sexuality and who we are, we need to turn to our anthropology, our human anthropology that's also written in Scripture through divine revelation. The first of those three fundamental elements with regard to the plan God had for us, male and female, in marriage is, number one, God made man in his image and likeness as male and female. So number one, we're made male and female. We cannot erase that. Even women at the Women's March, who I spoke to this weekend and I was interviewing. In fact, maybe I should pull up one of those interviews later this week. Even those people who are in favor of LGBTQ rights and so forth, I remember asking one of them, well, do you believe there are any differences between men and women? You want to know her response? Yeah, of course. Of course. Even people who are advocating for this radical gender ideology agree that men and women are different. Think about it. That's part of the reason why they're trying cross-sex hormone replacement therapy. Because they're trying to be someone they're not. Someone of the opposite sex. The second fundamental element in God's plan for marriage that we see in Genesis, now chapter 2, is that he intended for there to be a form of life in which a communion of persons, I quote, is realized involving the use of sexuality. This is where God says, that is why man leaves his father and mother and clings to his wife and they become one flesh. So the sexual bodily dimension of our bodies was actually a part of the communion of persons God created. So one, we're male and female. Two, our biological sex matters. And now three, God actually willed that the union between man and woman should actually have a fruitful dimension. That's why one of the very first things that God tells Adam and Eve is what? Be fruitful and multiply. So what do we understand in summary about marriage? We're made male and female. That involves sexual complementarity, only possible between men and women. And third, marriage is meant to bring about children. So once we get that into our heads and we understand where the church is coming from big picture, we also understand another dimension, that marriage between a man and a woman has also been elevated to what the church calls often the dignity of a sacrament. That's right, we actually create a covenant between husband and wife before God. And the church talks about how in Ephesians chapter 5, St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians, that this is a sign of the covenant between Christ and the church. This fidelity, this fruitful sacrificial love. Now, this is the problem with same-sex physical interaction. It's closed to the gift of new human life. There's actually no sexual complementarity. Not only can new life not come from it, but also it's harmful for the bodies of those people who are engaging in same-sex interaction. This is why it's actually the responsibility of the state to reaffirm and protect what marriage is, because it's good for people, but to object to what marriage is not. It's not that someone's being denied something that people will say is so-called justly due to them. No, it's actually that we're saying no to something that's unhealthy for a person. And I'm sorry to be a little blunt here, but I have to. Just the way a seatbelt functions in a particular way with what we would call a male and female end, so does a gas pump and so does the human body. And when we do not respect the fact that the body functions in a certain way, guess what? AIDS, increase in HPV, increase in all of these sexually transmitted diseases. Not only that, again, I'll just be a little blunt here for a minute. When you put certain body parts that aren't meant to work together in a particular way, we have astronomically increased our level of sexually transmitted diseases because the body parts aren't meant to belong there. It's creating friction in certain areas of the body that is so damaging, it's even more susceptible to sexually transmitted diseases. So is this good for the people who are engaging in these relationships? No. And this is the problem. When the state affirms it, people tend to believe that what is legal is moral. And they tend to think that that is now sanctioning that type of lifestyle, when in reality, it's actually sanctioning it in such a legal way, which, by the way, we've already done in the United States with civil unions and quote-unquote marriage. By sanctioning that, we're actually doing an injustice to a person, to the two people involved in that relationship. Not only that, but we haven't even talked yet about the impact this has on children. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. If you have a question about today's topic, head over to my Instagram story. You can find me at Timory, that's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, or give me a call at 1-888-914-9149. As I mentioned, we've not discussed the impact that so-called civil unions have on children. Let me start by sharing a personal story. Since I've been pregnant, there is a couple who's living a same-sex relationship, and they have children. Don't know how they got children. Don't ask me. They have children, okay? And it's all boys. It's a boys' club, okay, in this environment. Now, I've been pregnant. I recently met these people during my pregnancy. You know what's been really interesting to me is that one of the young boys has been so curious about me and my pregnancy, and I just see him staring with this admiration and curiosity. That young man has been denied a mother. That young man, although he may be in a very loving environment, I don't know a whole lot, I'm sure it is loving, has been denied a right because of his conception, and because of his birth, and because of his very existence that he should have access to. And I have to tell you, as someone who has worked in the crisis pregnancy situation for so long, I have seen women in horror over the idea of bringing a child into this world and knowing that that child won't have a father. I have seen women place their children for adoption because they want their children to have a mother and a father. Do you know what civil unions have done to the adoption situation? Women who are so willing to place their child with a different couple and not be in that child's life because they want that child to have the best possible circumstances to be raised, that entire situation is being threatened because most adoption agencies now have to place children for adoption with same-sex couples, even when that was the specific wish that a mother did not want to have happen. In fact, Catholic charities and Catholic adoption agencies are being shut down because they will not place a child with a same-sex couple, because they recognize that a child has a right to a mother and a father. And this is part of what's so beautiful about adoption, is that there are thousands of couples who have been waiting more than 10 years to adopt children. And these couples are in heterosexual relationships and available to give a mother and a father to a child who wouldn't otherwise have one. And so, again, this whole civil union issue doesn't just impact the two people who we would say, but they're in love. No, this directly impacts children. And often people who are in civil unions or here in the United States, so-called same-sex marriages, those people do want children. The desire to be fruitful is written on the human heart. It's the first command that God gives us. And so people are trying in incredibly creative and scientific ways to conceive children so that they too, even if not in a heterosexual relationship, can love a child and be loved by a child. And so all of this is a grave concern for us with regard to marriage and family life. And no, the Pope can't change the church's teaching on same-sex marriage, civil unions, and whether or not certain acts are sinful or not. In fact, this comes from the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, and it's a document that we're going to post on social media if we haven't already. I'll make sure it's up there, where it's talking about not just the church's role in defending one man, one woman marriage, and making sure that we don't give approval to civil unions, but it's even the state's job. In fact, it says, quote, "The state could not grant legal standing to such unions without failing in its duty to promote and defend marriage as an institution essential to the common good." The state has a responsibility to uphold marriage because marriage has to do with the common good, the good and fruitful development of the human person who has the right to a mother and a father. Now, here in the United States and many other countries worldwide, we've gone ahead and thrown our hands up and said, you know what, same-sex marriage, civil unions, they're okay. So we're living a culture of aftermath in terms of the civil law that's been implemented. But that doesn't mean that we cannot speak truth into society and say why marriage between one man and one woman matters, why children have a right to a mother and a father. These are things we have to stand up for unwaveringly. Don't be afraid to share this and to provide clarity in those environments where people might be a little confused about the latest remarks about what the Pope said. I'll be right back.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Coming up, I'll be answering the question having to do with when is it and is it not okay to delay having children. First, a quick question that came in on Instagram about a significant other looking at porn. She said, "I think my significant other is still secretly watching porn. How do I bring it up?" Number one, if this is something you guys have discussed before, recognize it's an addiction. An addiction is not easy to kick. And so this is why it's important that there's a plan made, and we'll talk about that plan in just a moment. But second, it's important not to make assumptions, but to clearly and candidly ask. Now, when you do so, it's important that your forgiveness is present and that you show compassion. But at the same time, you need to be that firm landing place that can help provide that person with the means they need for tools, but also the self-compassion and forgiveness they need to give themselves as well. So here are some of the things you can do to help. Any person who's struggling with a porn addiction needs an accountability partner, ideally of the same sex, and no, not your spouse, in case there was any confusion in the last segment. Second, filtration software is very important to help create that additional barrier, not just the power of will in doing it cold turkey, to not look at pornography, because the reality is there's exposure everywhere. And so CovenantEyes.com is an excellent filtration software that you can install on your computer, tablet, phone, you name it. Next, I also highly recommend that going through therapy is something that is held in a very, 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 very serious situation here. Because a porn addiction is a sex addiction, and addictions need greater intervention. Terry Crews, the actor and comedian, wasn't beyond needing a therapist, nor are you or your loved one. Also, we're Catholic. The sacraments and the grace of the sacraments can make an incredible difference in our life. I do not think that you should only turn to the sacraments. Not that the sacraments aren't efficacious and full of grace, but we need the accountability partners. We're communal human beings. We need the therapist to get over an addiction. We need those additional barriers with Covenant Eyes and other filtration software. Also, I want to encourage you to check out integrityrestored.com. Our good friend Jim O'Day is there, and they're helping people to regain their integrity after the impact of a porn addiction, whether it's been yours or that of a loved one. So be sure to go check them out. I want to talk about our churches burning. You may have heard the latest in the last couple of days, two more churches were burnt and looted in the capital of Chile. There are images on my Instagram story that you can look at that are absolutely jaw-dropping. It pains my heart to see it. Beautiful church steeples that are being burnt high up into the sky. Heads of the Blessed Virgin Mary, our Lord Jesus Christ, and other saints that are ripped off of statues. Who knows who the artists were in the history that's being destroyed? We've seen for years now the bumblebees in France, the rioters on college campuses in the United States, Chile, and many other countries, where at the same time we've seen Christianity has continuously been removed from the culture. Why are people rioting? Well, it's a sign of the hunger people have for God. They don't get religion. And think about it, we tend to attack what we do not understand. Think of gossiping. We tend to gossip and criticize other people that we don't like because they seem different from us. Think about a petulant child who is pouting and angry, and think when they tend to maybe kick that very toy that they're trying to play with. I think of a video game, a kid who's playing a video game and becomes angry. At a certain point, they don't get it. They can't figure it out. What do? They start throwing the video game, maybe even kicking the TV or whatever it might be. They start screaming and getting angry. Understand that we tend to attack what we don't understand. Most of the young people involved in such destruction, those involved in even the Women's March and the abortion movement, subscribe to socialism. At the heart of this is a government that becomes your God and denies the existence of God. This is a generation that has had their education handed to them through the government that says there's no God. It has had animosity toward God. These protests are a clear sign of the hunger people have for God. They don't get religion. The burning churches are a symbol of the deep cry within the souls of rioters and vandals. That cry is a cry for God, and while they may not realize it, you and I can. And this is what it reminds me of. Not too long ago, just back in 1979, Europe was facing control by the Soviet Union through a police state. Poland was one of those places. The newly elected Pope John Paul II returned to his homeland of Poland. By the way, tomorrow is his feast day, and I'll have a whole lot to share with you about him. Now, as St. John Paul II returns to Poland, the media is shocked. They thought no one would show up in this socialist state. But more than a million people came to see the Pope and hear the message of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And you want to know what the response of the people was? They chanted with a thunderous response, "We want God." And they shouted louder and louder, "We want God." That was a sign of the hunger people had for God. The burning churches, the riots, the anger over abortion is yet another cry for God in our culture. We don't understand why our churches are burning. We tend to become angry and frustrated. The reality is that this is a sign of a broken heart in our society. And we need to be willing to have forgiveness. Share the message of the gospel with other people. Just by living our lives joyfully, not becoming annoyed or addicted to the drama within the church, liturgical abuses. Not that these things aren't important, but that we tend to waste our time when we focus so much on the judgmentalism or how things are being done incorrectly by individuals in the church. We need to know our faith and practice it. That's what's important for you and I to do at this point in history. And we can't give up on this, because if we do, it will continue to create confusion for other people. And it will continue actually to contribute to the burning churches we see all around us. I mentioned earlier that we had a question come in about the timing of having children. On Instagram, one woman shared with me the exciting news that she and her husband were married this summer during COVID. She said they really want to start a family, but they're constantly unsure about the right time to try. She said, we're millennials and we still live in an apartment. Do you think we should be practicing NFP right now and try for a baby when we are in a home? Or is it really up to the couple? She said, I'd really like to hear your thoughts on the right thing to do. Our hearts want a baby, but is it a smart idea? The culture will tell you this. Wait till the time is right to have kids. Be in that house. Make sure you're healthy. Make sure you had plenty of time to recover from the last kid. Make sure that you have hit this specific goal in your career or education. Society will always tell you to wait. And even sometimes practical ideas in our own minds will tell us to wait to have kids. But should we? First, we have to recognize, well, what means does a person of faith, a Catholic, have to prevent having children? Contraception is off the table. Not only is it duly unhealthy for a woman in her body, and we'll talk about that actually in just a little bit here, but in fact, contraception goes against a fundamental idea about marriage between two people. The church teaches that every act of lovemaking between a husband and a wife must be unitive and procreative. So that means it must be for the good of the spouses to unite them, but also be open to new life and the children that could come from that relationship. Remember earlier, we're talking about the very first command that God gave to Adam and Eve, to us humans, was to be fruitful and multiply. Now, when the unitive or procreative dimension of marriage is destroyed, just one, not even necessarily both, it actually seriously impacts the two persons in that marriage. Now, with this in mind, the church has talked in its document, Humana Vitae, which I encourage every married or engaged couple to read and truly understand. And it talks about essentially grave reasons that a couple might still consider delaying having a child. Now, ultimately, these grave reasons you and I are culpable before God for. It shouldn't be, hey, I wanted to pay off my new car or boat. It shouldn't be, well, I really wanted to buy that new house or work a little longer in this new job. Grave reasons, although different from couple to couple, could be more serious things, such as someone has lost their job. For example, the serious illness of specifically the woman, where having children might be very, very difficult. But I can also tell you, I've had loved ones who have been told not to have more children, to have their tubes tied. And at the same time, they've been told that if they were to have a child, it would be life-threatening, life-ending. I can think of one person in my life in particular who proceeded to have two more children, and she's just fine. The ways of God and the ways of the world are radically different. So what means do we have then to delay or prevent having children? Well, a lot of people call it Catholic contraception. And I think that they call it that because we tend to have a contraceptive attitude at times about utilizing natural family planning. Natural family planning is a great gift, and you can work with fertility care practitioners not only to avoid having pregnancy if there's a grave reason to, but to actually conceive having a baby, to conceive a child. And I have to tell you, this was my story With two autoimmune diseases and various health issues, I was able to conceive a child. Truly, it was a miracle. I received anointing of the sick 3 weeks before conceiving a baby. I just have to put it that way. But I've also been working for quite a while now with incredible NAPRO doctors who help treat underlying causes that impact a woman's fertility. So natural family planning and NAPRO technologies can be used to help delay having children. But what's a proper reason? You know, this specific case that I've been given here, because you want to be in a home and not necessarily an apartment. I'm in an apartment and having a baby. People always say, well, don't you need another bedroom for a baby? No, not necessarily. Don't you need two jobs for a baby? No, not necessarily. There's a saying that often goes, there's no good time to get married, buy a house, or have a child. That's true. There will never be the perfect timing. But there's also another saying that says, with every child that's born, a loaf of bread comes underneath its arm. Children are a gift from God, and who are we to absolutely deny that through contraception or even through a contraceptive attitude utilizing natural family planning? I'm not saying that you can't ever use NFP. There are great elements to natural family planning. But what I am saying is often we say, you know what, I'm going to get married. This is great. Let's go. But we're going to practice NFP for the first 5 years of our marriage. The first 2 years, the first 6 months, the first year. Now, there can be legitimate reasons at times to do that. But us wanting to just settle into each other, wait to buy the house, isn't necessarily a serious reason. Think grave reason. You are culpable before God for that grave reason. And this is why Pope Paul VI in Humana Vitae does leave it in the hands of couples. We have to discern those grave reasons. And I think that we need to remember to not just think about it, to pray about it, to offer our bodies, our motherhood and fatherhood before God in these instances. There's never a, quote, right time to have a baby. And I will say, if the desire to have a child is on your heart, it's important to recognize, hey, that that's natural. It's a natural next step in marriage. And that if that desire is there and you're feeling even slightly uneasy about waiting to have a child, your conscience is kicking in. Let your conscience, your prayer life, and actually reading Humana Vitae be the guide to help you understand when it is and is not the right time to have a child. But really prayerfully consider, am I delaying having a child for material purposes that are just or for material purposes that are actually quite silly? Because many women in Italy, Denmark, and even now in the United States and in many other places in the world, years later look back and you want to know what they regret? They regret that they didn't have more children. We're even seeing this from some of the aging movie stars who have died in recent years. Don't let that be your story. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. We'll be right back. We'll talk about the abortion-breast cancer link.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
What a day. If you have any questions specifically having to do with what the heck the Pope said today, you missed it during the show, but you can catch it during the podcast. It will be available within the next hour or two. Just keep an eye out at relevantradio.com/trending, which, by the way, did you know that we're a podcast? You can subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Hopefully that's the Relevant Radio app. And you can share it with a friend, because I know there are a lot of people right now saying, so the church's teaching on same-sex unions has changed. Finally, the church is here with the times. No, it's not. The church's teaching on same-sex unions, same-sex marriage, nothing's changed. And I give you a clear explanation of understanding how it can't and why the church will not approve same-sex unions. So be sure to catch the podcast. It will be available in just a little bit if you have questions. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. 1 in 8 women, as I mentioned yesterday, in the United States contract breast cancer. Now, yesterday, I explained the link between abortion and breast cancer. So if you didn't catch it, go grab the podcast and you can listen. Today, I want to explain the link between contraception and not just breast cancer, but cancer as a whole. This is really important for us to understand because so many women are impacted by breast cancer today. And yet, there's a key prevention element that no one's talking about. Back in 2011, the USA Today reported that breast cancer cases from 1980 to 2010 had significantly changed. The University of Washington researchers showed that in 1980, breast cancer cases were around 640,000. By 2010, they were at 1.6 million at that time. That's more than double the number of cases of breast cancer. That's also a time when widespread adoption of abortion and contraception was on the rise. Now, here's something you might not know. Did you know that the United Nations recognizes the pill, the contraception pill, birth control pill, as a cancer-causing carcinogen? Did you know that the Cancer Research Center in the United Kingdom states breast cancer is more common among women who take hormone replacement therapy and the pill for long periods of time? The Journal of the National Cancer Institute said this: oral contraceptive use has been associated with an increase in the risk of breast cancer in young women. I bet you didn't know that. I've shared the story many times before, but a number of years ago, I was at the dentist, and we know our dentist and the dental hygienist pretty well. And my dental hygienist just loves to talk. And, you know, they're just sharp instruments in my mouth and I'm being pried open, my jaw's cramping. And she actually expects me to respond. And so she was always asking, what are you up to? And at the time, I was working in the crisis pregnancy center situation. And I am sharing a little bit about what I do. And somehow the topic of contraception comes up. And I end up bringing up something to do with contraception, how a lot of the girls have health issues because they're on hormonal contraception. She says, you know what? And again, I have no idea where her views are on any of this. I'm going to digress. We probably don't agree. But again, it's all about how you present the conversation that could be a means for a common ground, actually supporting what each other believes with regard to human life. Now, it was interesting. She said, do you know that the girl at the front desk is gone now? She was in her early 20s, unmarried. And I said, oh, really? She said, yeah. She said, she had serious breast cancer. She's not able to work. Did you know what her doctor told her when they first found out that she had breast cancer? He said, listen, it's not popular for me to say this, but I noticed on your chart you've been on birth control for about 8 years, since the time she was 13. He said, did you know that there's a serious link between contraception and breast cancer? No one had ever told her. This girl was losing her livelihood, the ability, the means to provide for herself, lost her job. This girl was seriously impacted by no one telling her. Aren't we all about informed consent? Aren't we all about choice? But no one knows the connection between birth control, contraception, and abortion. We're talking about contraception today. You see, the two components of contraception, hormonal contraception, are synthetic forms of estrogen and progesterone. Now, it's well known that these are actually group 1 carcinogens, cancer-causing agents. Now, we know that when you're exposed to high levels of estrogen through birth control pills, injections, or patches, and hormone replacement therapy, that this can exponentially increase your risk of contracting breast cancer or other types of cancer as well. Not only that, if you already have a genetic predisposition in you and your family toward cancer, the risk is even higher. It's almost giving yourself a sentence to breast cancer. No one wants to talk about it, though. The impact of contraception is very real, and you might have noticed a few minutes ago, I mentioned that also hormone replacement therapy. That's right. Hormone replacement therapy is all the trend today. Did you know that even a minor in many states doesn't even have to have a doctor's write-off or approval in order to access hormones? Because they will come into a Planned Parenthood and say, I identify as someone as the opposite sex and I would like to start hormone replacement therapy. Girls are doing this in hordes. It's become a trend among young women. And it's something we're seeing among young boys as well. Did you know that we're giving hormone replacement therapy to kids as young as 6 and 8 years old? I think of a little boy, Desmond. I think of another child named Taz. I think of another one named Jazz Jennings, who at a very young age started receiving hormone replacement therapy. These also function as puberty blockers if the child has not gone through puberty yet. But I don't hear anyone talking about the fact that this gravely increases your risk to contracting breast cancer. Not only that, hormone replacement therapy for an adolescent also impacts the development of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, the ability to reason, and shows a lifelong increase in a tendency toward depression and anxiety. The pill is not the answer. Yet the culture says you need this in order to have a career, in order to be educated, or in order to plan your family on your terms. Well, some women will never plan their family because hormonal contraception in some cases is causing permanent infertility, is causing breast cancer, and is even taking the lives of some women. That's how harmful it is for our bodies. I've stood in front of that abortion clinic counseling women who are considering having an abortion who have been on the pill for years. Young women who should otherwise be completely healthy have breast cancer. I remember sitting in the room with a young woman in the crisis pregnancy center when I was working there, and she kept talking to one of the counselors about how her arm was aching. I had just been in some of the latest research about implants and things in the arm as new types of hormonal contraception. I turn around, find a way to insert myself gently into the conversation, and between the counselor and I, we end up asking, hey, what kind of birth control are you taking? And we end up finding out that she's got all this pain in her arm and that she started taking a new type of birth control implanted into her arm just a few weeks ago. And yes, the pain going all the way up her arm into her neck and her shoulder started right after the implant in her arm. People tell you, well, this is better than taking the pill. This is better than having to remember. People say all these different things about hormonal contraception, yet women are suffering because of it. Like I said, some women will never be able to have children. Some women will face the consequences with breast cancer and other health issues. We're talking about blood clotting. We're talking about migraines, anxiety, depression. Women deserve better than birth control, and you and I have to be willing to say that. Women don't need birth control to be educated, have a career, or start a family. And you don't have to delay children for the perfect time. Yes, we need to be responsible with the gifts God has given us and our means, but also we need to trust in the providence of God that He will provide and that He has called us to the vocation of marriage, if that has been your vocation you've been called to. And that challenges you to be open to new life. Remember that first command that God gave Adam and Eve. Be fruitful and multiply with the children, but also the fruit of your character, the generosity and the willing spirit that you're willing to give to God. Tomorrow, Father Rocky will join me and we'll be talking a whole lot about our feast day, that is for St. John Paul the Great. Talk to you tomorrow.